And going back to my military friend, you know, knows all about, you know, 9/11, but he actually was pretty, he was old enough, you know, to go back, you know, all the way back to the Pan Am, you know, terrorist attacks. And he says it was a nightmare going to the airport during that time period, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Travis, you remember the Pan Am bombing, right?
Oh, yes. It actually started before then. I think it started in, like, the late 60s. Cuba didn't have an extradition treaty with the United States, and that's why if you look at movies from that time and someone hijacks an airplane, they say, all right, I'm taking it to Cuba. That was why. And that was when they started banning guns on flights and putting in the metal detectors and everything. And they finally, I think in like 72, 73, something like that, they finally got an extradition treaty with Cuba. And there were basically no hijackings on that, just like a scattered one here and there, but not any problem. But all those things that they put in place when all these Cuba hijackings were going on, they stayed there.
Oh, yep. To quote Milton Friedman, nothing is more permanent than a temporary government program.
Exactly.
Of course, the simplest way to get rid of all this, or to completely prevent all these terrorist attacks, well, I mean, aside from foreign policy stuff and in terms of hijackings, of course, would be to allow people to take guns back on planes.
Yeah.
So that they can defend themselves.
Yeah, they were allowed to do that
but
before 19...
But of course, you'll never hear that from, which is a bit ironic, since the same people who are most for these security measures... For the same people who are, oh, you know, don't take my gun away, man. It's like, bro, do you have inconsistency? Seriously, what the hell?
Well, and before 68, you could do that. And for most years before then, there were zero hijackings. And the occasional year, there was like one or whatever. So, I mean, all these things about how, oh, all of a sudden, people are going to just pull out their guns and start shooting each other on the plane. And then the bullet's going to hit the side and it's going to suck everyone out, like in that James Bond movie that was completely unrealistic.
Yeah, there were actually some scientists that debunked that. I mean, yeah, there is, you know, that sucking them thing, but it has to be a really, really big hole.
Even if it's a really big hole, it probably won't suck you out of the plane. The pressure differential isn't that much.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, basically translation of what they're saying, the sky is falling! The sky is falling! I mean, they might as well.
Yeah, but, you know, going back to that whole thing with, the gun hypocrisy, I actually have another friend. I'm not gonna, you know, I like him, but he can be a little silly at sometimes. He's from Norway, and there was one time where we got a comment about Breivik. You know, I'm pretty sure you guys remember who Breivik was, you know, that guy who went on that murder rampage in Norway, and there was actually a movement by some students who wanted, you know, to be allowed to carry guns more, to kind of reform Norway's strict gun laws, you know, because they felt if we had guns on the island, we probably could have defended ourselves. And my friend was like, oh, that would have been insane. Can you imagine all those kids just pulling their guns out on each other and just shooting it because they got upset or something? And I'm like, you know, that's not how people behave for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
Watching too many Westerns, basically. They actually think the Old West was like that. It wasn't.
Yeah. It's about 180 degrees wrong, from what I understand.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, another thing that gets ignored about the whole Breivik affair is, you know, because they always try it, because there was a lot of, you know, anti-gun stuff being said about Norway. And I think the real thing is, because I've actually studied and watched a documentary on that shooting, I think the real people to blame aren't, you know, quote-unquote lax gun laws, because Norway doesn't have lax gun laws that so many people were accusing it of. It's actually that while Breivik was murdering children, you know, the police were in Oslo looking around for a bomb that wasn't there. You know, they had all these calls from kids saying, you gotta help us, there's a crazy madman on here with a rifle and he's shooting at us. And the Delta unit, that's the Norwegian SWAT team, said, oh, we'll get to you soon, but we gotta look for a bomb first. You know, and the thing is, my friend actually defended their decision to do that, because we thought there was, he says, well, there might have been another bomb there, and you don't have another unit that could have took care of that while the SWAT team goes out to deal with the crazy guy.
And let me guess, the excuse after that was, oh, well, it's because we don't have enough funding or some such nonsense.
We need paramilitary equipment.
Well, you know, the Norwegian police don't, for the most part, like, with the exception of special units, they don't carry guns. So that's one good thing, you know, I mean, you're... Because, like, look, you know, a lot of statists, you know, love to use Norway as an example of how we should run as a society, but I have plenty of Norwegian friends on Skype, and they can all debunk 90% of the myths people say about Norway.
Sounds like Tim in Canada, basically.
Yeah, like, one of the biggest myths about Norway is that they're all happy and friendly, and they'll greet you no matter what. No, believe it or not, many Norwegians are pretty racy. Like, you know, not to draw the race card, but I've met quite a number of them where... they either flat-out hate certain races, or they have very, you know, a great mistrust of them, you know.
Well, it's a very homogenous culture up there, and one of the things that has really helped ease racist attitudes and racial tensions is just people growing up around people of another race where they can see, hey, this is someone with darker skin than I have, and who cares?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm going back to that. I know one friend, you know, from Norway, and he does not like Romanians or Germans. He doesn't like Romanians because he claims they're thieves, and he doesn't like Germans because they invaded his home country 70 years ago. And I'm like, really? You hate Germany for something their government did 70 years ago? That's like saying I hate the British for what they did to the United States, you know, 200 years ago. It's like, that makes no sense.
More original sin nonsense, really. And yeah, the homogeny thing, I'm told that that's a reason also why why a lot of Japanese people in Japan tend to be a bit xenophobic, I'm told.
Oh yeah, there's actually a guy called Gaijin Goomba, you know, who's been to Japan for a while, and he said, you know, the Japanese aren't exactly xenophobic, but when they see a foreigner, they tend to treat him like a stereotype, because that's the only exposure they get to people of a foreign race, for the most part, is seeing them on TV. That's why they think that all Europeans, you know, speak in French accents and are highly intelligent, and all Americans are silly drunkards who love guns, explosives, and beer.
That's the only pattern they have to match to.
Yep, yeah, that's all they see. That's all they see. Whenever they think of an American, all they think about is, you know, like that one American character on the anime, you know, who's always, you know, wisecracking and firing his guns and drinking and hitting on women. That's what they think about.
In all those things' defense, though, I think explosions are awesome. Love fireworks.
Yeah.
But,
So as long as you're not using them to harm anyone, they're fine.
Yeah, just do it safely.
Yeah, which the government's trying to do anyway, because apparently it's apparently against the law in some areas, you know, to teach people how to make bombs, you know, even if it's for, like, legitimate reasons like construction or land development.
This is also what kills me about the net neutrality, folks. Seriously, folks, you're trying to get the same people to run the internet who think that the internet is a series of tubes. Or to put it bluntly, could not be more clueless about the internet if they were from another universe with an entirely different set of physics. Give me a fucking break, guys.
Oh yeah, and going back to my friend Jason, you know, when he was in the army, that's actually where he became a libertarian, because he learned government incompetence. There was an actual incident where some of their weapons, you know, were getting old, they weren't working functionally, and they contacted, you know, I think it's like the U.S. Army Ordnance or whatnot. They said, hey, look, our M249 machine guns, they're old, they're jamming a lot, they're not firing reliable, we need new ones. And then they send the letter. It was an honest complaint by their company commander. They waited like several months, and finally when they arrived, the message from the border, from like the ordnance was, oh, it can't be done. We've got too many units. We can't be done. We can't give you machine guns. Sorry. It's like, it's just a machine gun. It's not like those fancy technology, you know. That's what really pisses off my friend, you know, when it comes to military spending, is that they're spending it on all these new fancy new airplanes that we don't need, yet we have, you know, guns that are like 20 years old that need replacement, and we're not doing anything about that.
And of course, Blame the First, in a blog post of his, noted something like new tanks that cost about the taxpayers about 180 or some odd million dollars that they didn't even ask for or even need.
Oh yeah, he said that. Yeah, they're spending money to work on, you know, like an M1A3 Abrams tank, and my friend Jason was like, why? The M1A2 works just fine. What's wrong with it, you know?
All this waste stuff, it makes me think of the economic calculation problem.
Oh yeah.
One of these days, whether if it's Shane, Steph, someone has to do a video of, like, explaining that and stuff, because I just find it so fascinating that basically means you showed that, okay, even if we had, I don't know, like, total saints in government, so suspending disbelief for a bit here, even then, even in the most ideal situation, government still can't work because of the economic calculation problem, the lack of the profit-loss mechanism.
I recommend LastPass. Yeah, randomly generate all your passwords.
Yeah, I use LastPass myself.
I tried to use LastPass, but for some reason it just doesn't work on my computer. Like, I don't know, like, it's just that I don't really know how to use it, really. Like,
One of the reasons why I recommend it is not because it's one of the strongest ones out there, but it's also the easiest to use that I've found.
Yeah, but again, I'm not really a good computer guy, so, yeah.
Yeah. I think starting with LastPass 3, it really got good enough that, I mean, I've taught, you know, my kids to use it, so
I actually did have an issue with it, but it was kind of in the opposite direction. Like, and I'm sure Shane probably remembers this, where I actually accidentally locked myself out of it.
Oh yeah,
because I couldn't find my grid, or my grid didn't work. Yeah, incidentally, if you ever do use LastPass, never ever use the grid as a multi-factor authentication.
I do not recommend the grid authentication unless you really know what you're doing.
Yeah,
Google Authenticator is good. You can use that one.
Yeah, that's what I'm using now, actually.
Yeah, and your big mistake was deleting your email account with your ISP.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was how you... That you can LastPass can recover this stuff. They'll just send it to your recovery email, but once you deleted your recovery email...
Yeah.
No getting it back.
Yeah. How I actually got the grid to work, I mean, and I don't remember doing anything different, so... Yeah, I have no clue how that actually ended up getting me in that time, but hey, you know, it's happened, my account's already back, so yeah, I'm not gonna question it. Don't give horses and all that. To give you an idea of how completely irrelevant these current scares are, I remember reading some people saying, oh, but we can't have the printing press because that'll kill literature. I shit you not, that was an actual thing people said back then.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is an interesting thing. You had Charles Dickens being much chagrined that people were just copying his books in America, because in America at the time, the copyright laws didn't apply to novels, and people were just copying him and sending him around. And, of course, he made a lot of money giving talks in England, and he noticed that in England, most of the people who came to his talks were kind of the higher-ups, the more posh people, not the real salt-of-the-earth people that he was trying to target.
Oh, yeah.
When he came over to America to speak, he packed them in, and it was mostly those same poor working-class people that he was going to... And it was because of the fact that since there weren't these copyright laws preventing them from doing it, they actually had access to his content. And while it's true that he didn't get any money from that, he got the money when they came in droves to see him talk.
Wait, so you're saying that an artificial restriction of supply increases price, thereby preventing poor people from getting a good or service? Say it ain't so!
Hard to believe, I know.
Oh yeah, and going back to that, there's actually reminds me of a similar incident that happened during the Cold War. You know, believe it or not, even though a lot of Western media and literature was banned in the Soviet Union, many Soviet citizens knew about it, and one of the reasons was because many mafia organizations, and in some cases anti-communist resistance groups, they would actually take, you know, very popular music or books, and they would make it, and they would try to copy it. They would make copies, and then they would secretly sell it and smuggle it into the Soviet Union. That's why when in the late 1980s, 1980s, when Bruce Springsteen went into East Berlin, he was shocked to find out that many people knew what song and lyrics he was going to play before he actually started really playing the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you still have all of these, this whole infrastructure, really, of piracy in Russia and China to this day, and that was how all that got started.
Oh, yeah.
And to a certain extent in North Korea, because I've actually heard some North Koreans, they know a few Western books and movies, even though those movies are legally illegal in that country. In fact, there was one famous documentary I saw where a lady was in North Korea, you know, being followed, and she actually encountered a Korean woman who was wearing a Nike hat.
Yeah.
And she actually approached her and asked her, "Where'd you get that?" And she said, "I honestly don't know. I think it's from Japan."
Yeah. Based on the horrible, horrifying things I've heard about what life is like in North Korea, which admittedly I haven't heard much about it, I wonder, how are these people still alive? I mean, how did they not all die out from the lack of wealth? And by wealth, I don't mean Mercedes. I mean, like, food and other stuff.
Because people are resourceful.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
yeah.
True.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there's testimonies that from ex North Korean patriots, you know, who have said, you know, that when food gets really short, they will, you know, eat anything they find on the ground. You know, they'll kill rats, cockroaches, lizards, snakes, and they'll cook it up and try to eat it.
My comments regarding California and thinking, like, so it seems like whenever I look up a business name, like, for example, a Ghirardelli, since it's a chocolate that I like, since I'm becoming a bit of a chocolate connoisseur, I think.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
Oh, yeah, I think. Okay, I notice all these companies, you know, all these other things, they're always, what the hell, they're always in California. The first thing I noticed was, well, one, it looks like these companies were established, but they were usually established well over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I have this weird feeling that it's, what happened was, they were a relatively free market for a while, and in recent, and maybe in the recent, I don't know, half a century or whatever time period it would have been, they're becoming more and more socialist. So it ends up blanking it up and making it look like, see, it's the socialism that made them more wealthy, etc. Even though they're most likely, they're probably just on borrowed time from what free market they did have at those times.
Yeah, pretty much, because if you look back at the gold rush was almost complete anarchy.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
I mean, even after you had the state government, it didn't do anything in these little remote areas where people had set up these boom towns and just kind of did things on their own.
Yeah. isn't that always how it works?
Yeah.
And the other thing I thought was, so based on what you told me in the podcast group on Skype, like how, well, California is actually pretty diverse, and apparently the parts, like, say, where Silicon Valley is, are actually extremely libertarian. I thought, so the fact that they're still, like, number 49 or 50 on the list of freedom, or how free the states are, makes me think, leads me to believe that that area is probably, like, the most free state in the region in the country. If even that still couldn't bring California up to, like, maybe at least 40th or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, they could probably even give even Tennessee or, hell, even Hong Kong a run for their money based on that stuff. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have mixed feelings about California. And speaking of dumb politicians, I actually was doing some research one time and I actually found out that, no joke, you know, the United States officially, there actually is a U.S. city that now officially has a communist in its government. And guess what city that is? Seattle. Some lady called, Kashima Sawant, she's a counselor, she's a member of the group Socialist Alternative, and she, which is a Marxist organization, and it's pretty interesting because I read this funny article she wrote where her long-term economic goal was she was going to kick Boeing, which is the biggest employer in that area, out of the city. Then she wanted to annex, you know, all of the factories and try to retool them to make buses and all that. Yeah, she thought she could do it, and my thought is, okay, how are you going to carry that? Who's going to pay for it? You know, not to mention, what if Boeing takes all their equipment with them and they just leave behind the factory? Now you've just got an empty building.
That's kind of like the people who want to kick Google out of San Francisco.
Yeah, you know.
It's like, what, are you stupid?
Yeah.
Wait, I always thought San Francisco was rather anti-libertarian, but yeah, go figure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of parts of California that are like that, you know. Not to mention, it's so funny with Silicon Valley and all, you know, with all the talks about secession. There's so many people ranting, saying, "Oh, that's just an excuse, you know, for corporations to go on a private island and keep all their money." It's like, well, you're ranting and raving about them being there in the first place. Don't you want them to leave? You know.
Well, and they say, if you don't like paying the taxes, why don't you leave?
Exactly.
And then they start leaving.
Yep. Yeah, it just goes how they're like that, you know, because they realize, you know, you have to pay for it. You know, that's the biggest fallacy with communism and command economy. You run out of other people's money.
Yeah.
And it personally, it reminds me of the bit with, I want to say it was Burger King a few months or a year or so back.
Yep.
And I remember this one guy on the forum, I think it was on Facebook, like a Robert, R-E-W-H-W or something or else, like, he was like, yeah, you liberals are such hypocrites. You say that if you don't like it here, to leave. And when they do leave, you complain about how they're stealing from you.
Yeah, it's just stupid. You know, I mean, just how some people think, you know, it's like, you know, I'm all for California seceding. You know, I mean, I'm being dividing because, you know, personally, you know, it's a bad state, you know, not to mention I've actually heard, you know, it's so diverse that there's actually people in certain areas that I said I'm all for because I honestly feel Sacramento doesn't represent my district, you know. They're only listening to the firms in Los Angeles and all the other tourist cities. They're not listening to the areas that are agricultural or industrial.